Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. This is part two of a Squawk Pod Report's special series, Our Weekend with Warren Buffett. We're coming to you straight from Omaha, Nebraska, at the Berkshire Hathaway Annual Shareholders Meeting.
Thanks, Warren!
The biggest takeaways straight from Warren Buffett himself, like what they're doing with $182 billion.
We only swing at pitches we like.
And how the Oracle of Omaha is thinking about AI.
As someone who doesn't understand a damn thing about it, it has enormous potential for good and enormous potential for harm.
We bring you inside this whirlwind event, the shopping, the portfolio companies, the tens of thousands of shareholders and fans like the Harlem Globetrotters and Bill Murray.
Mr. Murray, you've definitely been to Globetrotter games, huh?
Yes, I have.
Yes, sir.
Shareholder and venture capitalist Ann Winblad wouldn't miss it.
The energy was really high in the room, and an event where you thought it might start out softer, but Warren was on his game for sure.
It's part Wall Street, part Main Street, part family reunion, quite literally. Warren's little sister, Birdie, shares her favorite Buffett memories.
Did I train him to be a winner? Because since he was winning all the time playing against me, that he owes his great success to the fact that I trained him to win.
We're bringing you to Omaha's annual party with its 93-year-old host, Warren Buffett.
And I not only hope that you come next year, but I hope I come next year.
This special Squawk Pod report starts right after this.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod Reports, where we're on the ground in Omaha, Nebraska, for the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting, with tens of thousands of Warren Buffett fans and dozens of Berkshire Hathaway portfolio companies.
Welcome back to CNBC's special coverage of the Berkshire Hathaway shareholder meeting. I'm Mike Santoli, live in Omaha, Nebraska. Becky Quick is heading back over to join us.
And a little Hollywood. On the exhibition floor of the annual meeting, Becky Quick caught up with a few surprise guests, like members of the Harlem Globetrotters.
So Warren's been waiting to tell you.
I gotta make an announcement.
And actor and shareholder Bill Murray, who had a surprise role in an annual Berkshire employee tradition, the $250,000 competition for a perfect March Madness bracket.
Every year when March Madness comes around, we have everybody at Berkshire can enter a tournament to fill out their bracket.
Right.
And the winner this year got $250,000. But, and it's limited to people that are on our payroll on our March 1st of the year. But this year, I invited two more people to participate in this affair. And today, I want to report the results.
We got the results. Here we go.
Let's go to the scorecard.
Yep, open it up. Hold your jersey.
And we go to the scorecard, and there were approximately 64,000 employees of Berkshire that entered the contest, and the winner got $250,000. And
my name's
Becky. I am happy to report She finished 29,488.
Wow.
So she was slightly above the average.
Wow.
But Mr. Murray, who has a son that is dynamite at UConn and knows basketball and all that sort of thing, but he came in 54,399.
Wow.
Wow.
Wait,
not only
top,
was
top were you waking?
I came in about where Becky did. I didn't want to be beaten by a girl, frankly. But I knew I wouldn't be beaten by Murray.
Yeah, I made the big mistake. You know, I rooted for the Washington Generals.
For 5 hours, annually, basically unscripted, Berkshire Chairman and CEO Warren Buffett holds court to answer shareholder questions. Some come through Becky Quick, who sifts through the thousands of questions submitted directly to CNBC. Other questions come from the crowd, live at the meeting, and nothing is off the table.
Most 27-year-olds have idols who are rappers, but instead, my idols are Warren, Charlie, who we'll miss forever, and also your cousin Jimmy, who unfortunately had to go this year too.
For many years, Buffett was joined by longtime Vice Chair Charlie Munger, his friend and partner in building up the conglomerate. Munger died late last year, just a few weeks before his 100th birthday. And even though the chairs on stage were filled by Berkshire executives Greg Abel, Buffett's successor, or Ajit Jain, Berkshire's Vice Chairman of Insurance, Munger wasn't far from anyone's thoughts.
Charlie, I'm so used to that. I had actually checked myself a couple times already, but I'll slip again.
It's a great honor.
Okay, let's do station four.
Hi, I'm Joe, visiting from San Francisco. How do you think about the role of technological advances, especially generative AI, on more traditional industries? Thank you.
Yeah. I made a mistake in calling on four, but I'll get back to two later on. I don't know anything about AI, but that doesn't mean I deny its existence or importance or anything of the sort. And last year I said, you know, that we let a genie out of the bottle when we developed nuclear weapons, and that genie has been doing some terrible things lately, and the power of that genie scares the hell out of me. And on the other hand, I don't know any way to get the genie back in the bottle. And AI is somewhat similar. It's part way out of the bottle, and it's enormously important, and it's going to be done by somebody. So we may wish we'd never seen that genie, or may do wonderful things, and I'm certainly not the person that can evaluate that. And I probably wouldn't have been the person that could have evaluated it during World War II, whether we tested a 20,000-ton bomb that we felt was absolutely necessary for the United States and would actually save lives in the long run, but where we also had Edmund Teller, I think it was on a parallel with Einstein in terms of saying you may, with this test, ignite the atmosphere in such a way that civilization doesn't continue. And we decided to let the genie out of the bottle, and it accomplished the immediate objective, but whether it's going to change the future of society, we will find out later. Now AI, I had one experience that does make me a little nervous, and I'll just explain it, that very, very recently, fairly recently, I saw an image in front of my eyes on the screen, and it was me, and it was my voice, and wearing the kind of clothes I wear, and my wife or my daughter wouldn't have been able to detect any difference, and it was delivering a message that no way came from me. So when you think of the potential for scamming people, it you can reproduce images that I can't even tell, that say, I need money, you know, it's your daughter, I've just had a car crash, I need $50,000 wired. I mean, scamming has always been part of the American scene. But this would make me, if I was interested in investing in scamming, it's going to be the growth industry of all time, and it's enabled in a way. Obviously AI has potential for good things too, but I don't know how you, based on the one I saw recently, I practically would send money to myself over in some crazy country. I don't have any advice on how the world handles it, because I don't think we know how to handle what we did with the nuclear genie. But I do think, as someone who doesn't understand a damn thing about it, that it has enormous potential for good and enormous potential for harm. And I just don't know how that plays out.
Halfway through Saturday's Berkshire Super Bowl, the shareholder meeting, CNBC anchors Becky Quick and Mike Santoli hosted a live halftime show. They sat down right on the hustle and bustle of the busy exhibition floor during the lunch break with a shareholder and investor in her own right, Anne Winblatt, a venture capitalist famous for her own tech bets over the last 30 years. Anne's firm, Hummer Winblatt Venture Partners, has launched 160 enterprise software companies, and Winblatt has served as a consultant for IBM, Microsoft, and others. She's also a shareholder of big names in tech stocks, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Apple, and Google. Here's Mike Santoli.
We are now joined by noted tech investor Anne Winblatt. She's the co-founder of Hummer Winblatt Venture Partners. Good to see you, Anne.
Good to see you, too.
Just remarking, the morning seemed to go nice and smoothly. Warren seemed to be on his game. What were your impressions?
The energy was really high in the room, and in an event where you thought it might start out softer, but Warren was on his game for sure.
He again was asked about AI and basically said, I'm not really, don't really know how it works, not an expert. Seems like it might have some dangers. Maybe it's going to foster a new golden age of scamming, I guess. He was introduced to an AI version of himself. How are you thinking about it, though, just in terms of the way the investment flows have been so massive, but mostly on the hardware side, at least initially, and how are you thinking about exploiting it?
Well, the investments have been pretty high on the software side as well. Yeah. I mean, we have at least 3 to 4 large platform vendors that on their earnings calls, with the exception of Apple, talked about AI quite substantially and how this wave is really important to their future products and their future customers. So we really are seeing that as part of the digital economy. This meeting is interesting because it sort of ignores the digital economy, with the exception of Apple, which is presented to everybody as a consumer brand.
That's why you're such a unique character, Anne. You've been coming to this meeting for a very long time. You're a VC investor. You look at growth stocks. You are interested in what's happening in the lands of technology. And yet you're here in this value investing bubble. And I just wonder, having a foot in each camp, what you take out of this weekend and what you kind of think from the Valley perspective at the same time.
Well, I'm originally from the Midwest, born and raised in Minnesota. So I am a Midwesterner. So at my heart, I probably am a value investor. The message to take away here is that we're all playing the long game. And that's really important to consider right now in technology. When you get to Silicon Valley, you get excited about the short game. What do we do today, tomorrow? What's right in front of me? Warren talked about a couple things where the deal flow he has is enormous, and he mostly says no. We're in the business of saying no as well. Our job is to audition the future. And at the same time, our job is to build products that serve customers. And many of our U.S. customers and global customers are right here at this conference. So it really gives you a feel of the customer to be here, as well as this concept that is more than a concept. It's really a core strategy that we're all playing a long game.
So your job, you feel like, is to say no most of the time, too. I think that's interesting because a lot of people look at what's happening in Silicon Valley and they say, oh, it's just buying a bunch of lottery tickets and figuring one of them will hit. You sound like you do things very differently.
I think true venture capitalists really are in the long game. They really are looking for technology change. They can sit on the sidelines and not do deals. They build investors in their funds who really understand that we're really looking to build substantial companies, not to flip companies or sell them, but we're really there to build value and long-term value. And we're really part of an industry. We're a focused investor. We are only software, although software is almost a $600 billion industry in the U.S. alone, about half the size of our largest industry, banking. So there's a lot going on at all times, but very few choices that will turn into large companies.
If the, I don't know, couple dozen companies that are represented here as Berkshire subsidiaries, if they were each a public company, and most of them could be, they would all have an AI strategy, or they would be talking about an AI strategy. They're talking about how they're going to basically be able to take advantage of it. How are you viewing that in terms of the application? Because when I said before that it's mostly on the hardware side, you know, Amazon, Microsoft, Meta, Google, they are absolutely more software players, but they're building data centers and they're acquiring a lot of hardware to do what they want to do.
Yeah, this wave of technology, AI, is more capital intensive than the cloud, which was more capital intensive than software before it.
Sure.
So it seems that each wave is requiring more integration into hardware and semiconductor technology, NVIDIA being the benefactor first here. But it really is the software that makes it magic, and the software and the chips, and the software and the data center, and the software on those platforms. Back to what these companies are doing, it was interesting, the discussion of Geico just catching up on the analytics wave. It's going to be very, very challenging for companies that are behind on the previous waves to catch up here, because this wave eclipses data analytics. It's not AI, it's generative AI. So we really do see fast-moving innovation here, which is an opportunity for those who can be extremely agile, have technical skills embedded in their company, really know how to integrate this into value for their company, whether it's productivity gains or new products, will end up ahead of the game.
Do you feel as if there's any kind of consensus gathering about how we might manage the risks here?
I think that's starting to gather. It's really not going to be through regulation because that's too slow and this is moving way too fast. But I do think we'll see more industry coherence in this case on this particular wave of technology of how to limit the bad actors. This is a powerful tool for good, as Warren said, and bad actors have caught on to digital technology some time ago, and the better tools we provide ourselves, the better tools we provide the bad actors.
Even if you can control it and have industry consensus within the United States and maybe even some of the Western countries, it's a different story when you know places like China are digging into this and maybe they have a different viewpoint of some of those things or some of the bad actors to be able to pick up on that. How do you stay ahead of it?
You can't. So this is why we also invest in security companies. So what happens in the investment strategy here is you see the platforms first. You then see probably a couple application companies emerge like Salesforce did in the cloud. But around it, we build the picks and shovels of security. Those are great investment opportunities for us. And we really start getting ahead of it, even at the coding level.
And great to see you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This year, several comments from the question and answer portion of the Berkshire annual meeting made news. Succession, of course, Buffett's loss on his stake in Paramount stock, his trim of a large position in Apple, all of which you can hear in part one of this Squawk Pod Reports series. Right now, you'll hear the other piece of big news, what Berkshire Hathaway is doing or not doing with its huge pile of cash.
Becky.
This question's from Johan Halen.
who writes, "You're sitting on $168 billion of cash, which you told us today is now more than $182 billion. His questions are, one, what is Buffett waiting for? And two, why not at least deploy some of it?"
Well, I think that's pretty easy to answer. I don't think anybody sitting at this table has any idea of how to use it effectively, and therefore we don't use it, and we don't use it now at 5.4%, but we wouldn't use it if it was at 1%. Don't tell the Federal Reserve that, but we prefer it. But we only swing at pitches we like, and if anybody tried to swing at every pitch or felt that because they hadn't swung at a pitch for the last two pitches, they ought to swing at the third one or something like that. There are times, and they're obviously, but I would say this, I would not like to be running $10 billion now. $10 million, I think Charlie or I could earn high returns on, because I think there's just a few things that happen on a very, very small scale. If we had $10 billion, I wouldn't basically see, I don't, many more opportunities than we found. Now, it's true that something like Japan we could have done if the company had had a $30 or $40 billion, and we'd have had great returns on equity. But if I saw one of those now, I'd do it for Berkshire. It isn't like I'm got a hunger strike or something like that going on. It's just that things aren't attractive, and there's certain ways that can change, and we'll see whether they do.
There is so much more from the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting on Squawk Pod Reports coming up right after this.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back. This is Squawk Pod Reports. Warren Buffett has been writing an annual letter to shareholders each year since the late 1950s, with updates on investment return and capital, as well as musings and personal philosophy. For many years, Buffett said he'd start to write thinking of his two siblings, Dear Doris, Dear Bertie, in an effort to be clear, succinct, and understandable. Doris Buffett passed away in 2020. In 2024, her younger sister, Bertie, a long-standing character, took center stage in the annual letter when her brother called her his perfect mental model. Bertie and her daughters have most of their savings tied up in Berkshire, and Buffett calls her smart, wise, savvy, and very sensible. Warren Buffett is addressing tens of thousands of investors when he's writing, but it's the singular Bertie whose questions he aims to answer.
I outed my sister when I wrote about her in the annual report, Bertie's here today.
Bertie sat down with Becky Quick this weekend to share some of her own wisdom and her love for the man we know as the Oracle of Omaha.
When we're talking about Warren, I don't tear up because I know he was wearing mascara.
To Bertie Buffett Elliott, he's just her big brother.
Bertie, it is wonderful to see you here. This is a place you've been coming for a very long time. You come back every year, and you're always a big part of things here. But this year in the annual letter, you really took center stage. I mean, you were the opening of the letter, the heart of the letter, the end of the letter. Warren said that when he thinks about writing this, you are his perfect mental model. What did you think when you read that?
I cried. That's what I think, yeah, but I'm going to try not to cry right now. Anyhow, no, it was so sweet. He told me he was going to put me in the annual letter, but he didn't read it to me or anything like that, and I had no idea it was going to be what it was. And it was so sweet. Gosh, well, he's the closest person to me in the world because he's been in my world ever. He's older, for anyone wondering. And so he's been with me my whole life, yeah. And still is. And there are not many of us in our generation left now, so that even makes it more special. But even without that, you know, he's the one that has always been there. And in a way, he's my big brother, and he's protected me or always helped me if I need it. And he's, for length of time, you know, my biggest ever, and still is, emotional support.
Warren pointed out in the annual letter that you are a really smart, savvy investor, that you're somebody who reads many newspapers every day. You have an opinion about financial issues. But you're also somebody who is a very smart investor in her own right, that you, something like 45 years ago, you kind of decided to take all of the other things that you were trading, and what happened? You put everything into Berkshire for the most part.
Well, I figured out that Warren was better at it than I was. That was easy. I mean, it sounds so simple, but that's just what happened. And I thought, this is ridiculous. You know, he is so good. And it was a little, the hardest thing for me, and I think it's hard for a lot of investors, is that Berkshire Hathaway doesn't pay dividends. Mm-hmm. And I was in a place in my life where I wanted some dividends, you know. And Warren said, well, you just sell stock, you know. It's like, sell stock, you know, no, can't sell principal, you know, whatever. I didn't say that to him, you know, because I just listen and do what he tells me to do. So anyway, but once I got over that hump and realized, well, that's wonderful. I can decide when I declare a dividend. I can declare one for myself, you know, in essence, by selling some stock. And I can choose when I'm going to do it and choose how much it is. And it's capital gains instead of regular income tax. And that's good. And, you know, that didn't stop me from doing it, but I had to get used to that emotionally, but I did pretty fast.
And he said, then you made that change and then you did nothing, like the
right.
Patience.
And there were a lot of times along the way, because I had a brokerage account and people, you know, who were brokers or this or that, or wanted money to start something or whatever, you know, approached me about that. But luckily, I didn't even have to think about it much. I mean, I knew I was all in with Warren, and still am, and all the way.
It's a strategy that has served you well. So you and Warren have always had this wonderful relationship. He says you all have never had a fight, but he does say that there are some competitive streaks.
Yes.
what comes to mind when you think about competitive games or issues with Warren?
Well, being younger, we have had an older sister who's now gone, but she was very sophisticated and whatnot. And I think Warren was very smart because he picked out me to play all the games with, because I'm 3 years younger, and he won everything. And for some reason, it didn't bother me. I still wanted to play. You know, I was always hoping for a win. So we played everything from ping pong to cards to Monopoly to boxing to, I don't know, anything that you could play, we played. And sometimes he did clever little tricks on me that, for some reason, it didn't make me mad. I just wanted to be part of it. You know, I just wanted to be doing stuff with him. And I also have a joke with him that when we played Monopoly, when we were, and I was really little, of course, and he was a little bit older, but I remember this so distinctly, but I was so happy because I had this money and I was saving up the money in little piles in front of me. But as I noticed as the game went on, I was landing on more and more properties, and then they had houses and hotels. Pretty sure all my money was gone. And I realized too late that it was a better strategy to buy property than hoard the money. But my joke with him about that is, and we laugh about it because it is actually a joke, but that I trained him to be a winner, because since he was winning all the time playing against me, that he owes his great success to the fact that I trained him to win. And he loved it so much, he just kept going. But that's a joke.
It's good work, Bertie. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure. And I just want to say one thing, because many people ask me about Warren, you know, when they find out about him and stuff. And to me, he's always been my big brother. He's my big brother. You know, I know he's this tycoon and stuff, and I sort of know that in my head, but that has nothing to do with my reality. He's my big brother, and he's always been a wonderful big brother, and I love him, and I feel so lucky that he's my big brother.
Okay, station 7, please.
Hi, Warren. My name is Christine Hone Garcia, and I'm from Agora Hills, California. Thank you for being an excellent teacher and imparting your wisdom to us throughout the years. What advice would you like to share today that you believe everyone needs to hear?
Well, too bad you didn't add, you added that what the rest of us would like to hear. I would say that if I had one piece of advice, I would try to, and you're lucky you live in this country, because it's just to start with, because you've got opportunities here that wouldn't exist in much of the world. But I would like you to really sort of use Charlie's advice of thinking how you would like your obituary to read, and then start selecting the educational paths, the social paths, you know, whatever may fit your particular situation in terms of associating. And perhaps, certainly in my day, I would have been marrying the person that would best help you do that. Well, Charlie would say you are offering some similar benefit to the partner. And, you know, the opportunity in this country is, you know, is basically limitless. When you think of going back not that many centuries, you know, if you were going to be a shepherd or something like that, you know, 100 years from now, your grandson was a granddaughter was going to be a shepherd. I mean, nothing really happened. And what has happened in the last 200 years with the combination of the Industrial Revolution whether it's science or education or health, or you name it, we are so lucky to be born when we were, the people in this room, and many of us were lucky enough to be born in the United States as well, you're entering the best world that's ever existed, and you want to find the people to share it with and the activities to participate in that fit you. And if you get lucky, like Charlie and I did, you find things that interest you young. But if you don't find them right away, you keep looking. And I always tell students to take the job find the job that you would like to have if you didn't need a job. And sometimes you can find that very early, and sometimes you go through various experiences, but don't forget what you're actually trying to do. And there's no place to do it like this country, and find the person that you'd like to share your life with in many cases. And then, you know, sometimes you get lucky and do that early. And sometimes you make mistakes. I would try to, in a very, very general way, I would try to figure out how you'd want to look back on your life and think about yourself and start today to go on the path that leads to to that goal and expect some difficulties along the way. But if you're thinking that way, you're more likely to get there. If you're being kind, you're doing something that most of the rich people don't do even when they give away money. But that's not a question of whether you're rich or poor. And I would say if you're lucky in life, make sure a bunch of other people are lucky too. But thank you very, very much for coming. And I not only hope that you come next year, but I hope I come next year.
And that wraps up our Squawk Pod Reports series covering the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. You can watch the full question and answer sessions from the 2024 meeting on the Buffett Archive. It's the definitive collection of Warren Buffett in his own words. Head to buffett.cnbc.com. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in to CNBC weekday mornings, 6 to 9 a.m., or listen to this podcast for the best of our show, plus a little extra, like today. Squawk Pod is produced by me, Katie Kramer, Cameron Costa, Caroline Rahotis, and Zach Felici. John Lazration is our editor. Special thanks to Becky Quick, Lacey O'Toole, and the whole CNBC crew in Omaha. We're heading home from Nebraska, and we'll meet you right back here tomorrow.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.